Hey there, I'm Evan DeWald, and I'm joined by Tara Lindsley, and this is Unpacked. We're unpacking life as messy people. So here, we do the things that we do the best. We tell stories, and we share life with each other. Sometimes life gets big and messy and full of failure and vulnerable moments, but we believe that sharing those things together helps us all to grow. So have a listen. Make sure to like and subscribe. Hey, Tara.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Good. You?
I'm doing good. It's been a wild week.
Yeah, a little bit.
Lots of things happening.
Yeah, even to the point where we forgot to do this intro when we were together.
Exactly. I think it's going to be a good show today, though. So the guy who's joining us, his name is Connor Sarazen, and he is a First Nations gentleman who essentially works for the Kairos organization, which does all the like training and blanket exercises. And so we're going to talk a bunch about blanket exercises. Do you know what those are?
Well, I do, but maybe some people who are listening don't. So we do explain what the blanket exercise is in the episode, but can you summarize it?
I can. It is one of the, in my opinion, one of the foremost ways of learning about Indigenous culture and history in Canada. And it is an exercise. So it's not just like sit in a classroom or whatever, but it's an interactive exercise where they use blankets to tell the story, essentially, and individuals to tell the story. I've done it once several years ago, and it was shocking to learn the history. And I know we've done several episodes before. And I have shared just about how little I feel like I know about Canadian history, in particular in terms of the Indigenous people and how Canada kind of went about our business back then.
And me too.
Probably still in some ways.
They do it online now too. So that's awesome.
So you can do it online. You can do it in person if you can find one in your community. But Connor is awesome. He does a great job of kind of sharing some of our stories. He's a bit of an artist too, and he did some work with that. And I think you're going to share some of that stuff too.
Yeah, he sent us the links to some of his murals and projects he's worked on, which is really cool. So, and he shares his life and story with us. He shares some stories of racism and some challenges he's faced in his life.
Always good to hear people's stories, hear what they're up to, how they're changing the world. And Connor was no different. Again, we are so glad that you decided to join us today. We always like it when you like us. We're kind of like that, honestly. What I mean is, we always love it when you like, comment, share our episodes with friends and others who might be interested in some of the topics that we talk about. And we hope you enjoy the show.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Connor, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Is it nice out there? Is it?
Yeah, actually, it's -9 here right now, and the sun is out nice and sunny, and they're calling for like +6 or +7 tomorrow with rain. So we'll see what happens.
That does sound good.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
We've had awesome weather, and then last night it started to snow a little bit, so we're gonna have a good day today.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, we have a guest with us. His name is Connor Sarazen, and he's out in Ontario somewhere. But we're gonna talk about some fun stuff and some exercises and some Indigenous things, and I think it's gonna be great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, so Connor, we are glad that you've decided to join us on Unpacked, and yeah, we want to hear a little bit about your life to kind of kick off. As you know, part of what we're trying to do on the podcast is to tell story and help people to kind of hear a little bit of who is on the other end and who is sharing with us. And then we want to talk a little bit about what you do for a living and talk a little bit about the blanket exercise is one of the things. Just tell us a little bit about you.
I guess I'll start with Quay. Connor Nishkaz Makwa Nedodim. Pikwaknagan Ndojaba, Anishadash Deep River Nadab, Omama Winini, and Shnabri in any in and out. So hello, my name is Connor. Thank you for having me here. So I'm Bear Clan from Pikwaknagon First Nation, and I live in Deep River, Ontario. And I am an Algonquin Native man. So I work for Kairos Canada and within the Kairos Blanket Exercise Program as the Partnership and Communications Coordinator. Although I am formally trained in graphic design, my professional life kind of took a little different direction over the years, but I do continue to oil paint and do murals whenever I can.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I've worked in a few different nonprofit organizations and some different public sectors over the years.
Okay. So you just said something that made me I want to ask a question. So favorite things to paint or murals to do? Like, do you have a favorite mural you've done?
Yes, I just finished a mural over the Christmas holidays, actually, for my community, for Child and Family Protective Services. So I did a mural for them, and it was just based on spiritual, mental, physical well-being and protecting our children. So I did a 15 by 11 foot mural in their boardroom. I surprised myself sometimes, but I was very happy. It took me like 19 hours to do the whole mural.
Okay.
And it turned out really well, so I was very, very happy with that.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, but do you have pictures of it that you can share with us so we can put it on our website? And okay, awesome. Cool. Awesome. Actually, if we're going to put the picture up, can you tell us a little bit, just describe to us a little bit in a what has it got on it?
Basically, it's almost like a landscape with a lot of clouds, different color clouds. In the middle is a medicine wheel with two kids facing each other. And on the bottom, I have two feathers, one on each side. And within the feather, you can see the face. There's a man on one side and a woman on another, kind of coming out of the feathers, looking up at the children. Yeah, it's very colorful. And I did they wanted a frame around the mural, so I kind of did it like birch log frames. What I can do is I actually did a timeline, like a time lapse of my painting.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome. And, I look forward to seeing it. Hey, so tell us a little bit about your... So you think you're going to be a graphic artist, obviously, if you go off to get an education for it, and then you end up working for Kairos Canada. How did that... is there a story there? How did that play out, or what?
Yeah, life sometimes, takes us down different paths, as I'm sure everybody can relate. When you think you're headed in one direction... sometimes opportunity knocks. I had a part-time job while I was in school taking graphics, to help supplement some income, doing paintings, doing photography, say working part-time. And then, one job led to another, and then, you get promoted into, different areas and, going into management, and then, an opportunity came up to be a graphic designer for a nonprofit organization in tourism. So I took that, but it was only, it was just a funded position, falling back into what I knew, which was sales, and ended up taking a management position, being in some, pretty neat different industries, learning a lot. And then when the position came up for Kairos, which, like I said, my title right now is Partnerships and Communications Coordinator. So it really combined everything that I've learned over the years with, the account management and negotiations and stuff like that, and combining that with my graphic design and, having that design element. So it was time for a big change. And that big change also included a move halfway across Ontario.
Okay.
So I was living up by Thunder Bay. Now I'm almost just a couple hours outside of Ottawa. So,
okay.
So I'm 2 years in now. And I mean, I'm not bored at all. There's never a dull moment. Things are always, you know, constantly changing. And what I speak with folks across the country and around the globe in this position. So it's great, even at, you know, 9-10 o'clock at night, speaking with some folks in Japan. You know, it's a fantastic experience that way.
You're speaking to people in Japan.
Yeah, with the blanket exercise. Yeah, we have folks, Switzerland, Japan, Australia.
Really?
Wow.
Oh yeah, yeah, the States. Oh yeah, all over the globe.
Okay, so we're gonna get into it, mm-hmm. what the blanket exercise is and some of those kind of things in a second. But can you tell us a little bit about, like, and this is backtracking a little bit, but like, what? So your parents moved around. You just kind of alluded to a second ago. But what was little Connor like? Like, I'm kind of curious to know, like, what kind of kid were you? What were you?
Just like any other kid, probably, you know, doodling and, you know, doing cartoons and, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day when, you know, Mickey Mouse and, you know, all those Disney characters were the thing. And one day, I think I was in like my late teens, my mom was like, okay, you need to do something with color mm-hmm. instead of always pencil. And she bought me just a little, you know, starter kit of oils. And, you know, a couple little boards that, you know, you can buy at the dollar store or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I've always lived in the bush. So it was nothing for me to just buy it and, you know, do little scenery and stuff. And that's exactly what I did. I just started painting.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have two older sisters. They're quite a bit older than me. So it was pretty much just me growing up, because, I mean, no teenager wants a little kid around.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what you do. Like, maybe we should start with this. It's like, we've referred to it a few mm-hmm. times. For those who are listening, can you, like, give us a basic, like, what is the blanket exercise? Like, I know lots of people who are like, yeah, I saw they were doing some blanket thing over at that. I don't know what that was. We want to hear some stories from folks that have come out of the blanket exercise. But first, can you just tell us, like, for a listener, if they ever got an invitation or decide to sign up for a blanket exercise, what could they expect?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the blanket exercise actually is something that stemmed from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, as far as educating people on Indigenous history. So this started actually 25 years ago this year. So this is the Carter's Blanket Exercise 25th anniversary this year. So it had very, very humble beginnings. Ed Bianchi, who is the program manager right now, and this was before Kairos even became Kairos, that this exercise started. And there was only a couple of people actually working on this in this program to help educate people on Indigenous history. And, you know, sometimes I'll hear people say Canada's true Indigenous history. It's not definitely not what I learned in school. Mm-hmm. Now I think the education system, their curriculum is changing, and they're starting to learn what Canada's Indigenous history is all about. But the exercise itself is very is participatory. So all of the participants are interacting with each other. They are reading different parts throughout the exercise. The blankets of the exercise represent the land. So at the beginning of the exercise, the blankets are all spread out, they're all touching. And then as the exercise progresses, you know, people are leaving the blankets. Blankets are being folded up to represent Indigenous peoples being relocated to reserves. Mm-hmm. People are leaving the blankets, representing Indigenous people who have died from disease or as the exercise goes through, you know, people are walking around, and then at the end, you know, they have a really good visual of, you know, the how things were at the beginning. You know, people were wandering around all over these blankets, they were free, and then at the end, you know, there might be, well, depending on how many participants, of course, mm-hmm. but, you know, there might be just a handful of people left standing on little, like, postage stamps left of what the blankets are. So it really gives a good visual representation of what's happened over the last 500 years. With the pandemic, we kind of had to switch gears because we weren't allowed to have the gatherings. Yeah. So the team worked very, very hard and created an online version. So we now have a virtual version of the exercise. And of course, we can't have blankets for everybody to wander around, but we use virtual backgrounds to represent the different scenarios. So, you know, when everybody starts, everybody has the background of like land or buffalo behind them, or you know, teepees, representing, you know, the land and how life was at the beginning. And over the course of time, people die again, like I said earlier, from, you know, disease and stuff like that. So their backgrounds get changed to like the night sky and stuff like that to represent. Okay. So at the end of the exercise, you still get that nice visual of who still has the land behind them, who's left on their original, the original land, and, you know, who's no longer with us. So it has that, it still has that visual impact. And for some people who've experienced both, yeah, they've actually commented that the virtual exercise in a lot of cases is actually a lot more impactful than the in-person, because virtually we have some videos of the firsthand accounts of like residential school survivors. So when you hear a story of like an elderly, you know, little lady talking about, you know, her experience when she was 6 years old, being in residential school, you know, that has to pull out some heartstrings for sure, right? Mm-hmm. So when you have some of these firsthand accounts, even though they're, you know, just on video, I think it has a lot more impact that way than somebody reading during a regular exercise when you're in person.
You said something a few minutes ago, and I always have a surprise question or two that I throw into the podcast. But you had said, you know, that the blanket exercise helps you to hear the true history, mm-hmm. and that wasn't history you learned even when you were in school. So I want to put you a little bit on the spot, but can you articulate what was the biggest surprise for you as an Indigenous person when you realize that what was being taught and what the blanket exercise even, because I'm assuming even you learned things, like it's a long history. It's not like every Indigenous person out there knows every fact about everything mm-hmm. that's happened. But for you as an Indigenous person, was there a particular blanket that got removed and you went, what?
Yeah, there's a few, actually, I don't think I can narrow it down to just one. But just learning some of the things, like growing up, I knew about residential schools mm-hmm. and I knew I had relatives buried. Nobody could really pinpoint where, but I knew that they were there. And I think like it wasn't something that, you know, as kids or even young adults, you talk with your friends about. It's just something that you assume that everybody knew, that it was just kind of common knowledge. But the first time I did the exercise and learning that people are just hearing about residential schools in a lot of cases for the first time, I found very surprising. You know, when people talk about the discovery of the 215, and I'm like, no, it's not discovery at all. It's recovery. It's a different word that we should be using. I think with the exercise itself, just learning some of the things, like you said, the exercise goes through like the last 500 years. So, you know, learning about the numbers of kids that were taken and put into residential schools. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, fast forward and, you know, we were talking about kids in the system now, which is actually higher than at the height of the residential school. So things like that, like, I find very shocking. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as much progress as I like to think we've made as Indigenous peoples, that maybe, you know, on some things the scale has kind of slid backwards a little bit, that we're going the wrong way instead of, you know, the right way. There's a lot, I mean, I know there's a lot of issues out there, but I think learning as people share after the exercise, people have a real fear of Indigenous people just for being Indigenous, and that is surprising. So it has nothing to do really with removing of the blankets and stuff like that. I think it's the other issues that as the blankets are being removed, that, you know, now new problems are being created and there's no solutions, no concrete solutions to these issues.
Yeah. I think that's one of those interesting things when I think about, this is not the same, but it is the same in terms of, like, when you think about reconciliation, whether it's Canadian history and reconciliation with our Indigenous people, or reconciliation with just somebody. And there is no perfect, concrete way to go through reconciliation, to forgive and resolve something, whether it's another human that you've had conflict with, or a nation. Mm-hmm. There's not a perfect process. It's people. It's like humans trying to make space for each other. And I definitely think, I'm no authority on this, but I think when we stop making space for each other, like I think has happened in Canada, to be honest with you, there isn't a good path back, right? Like, it's just so hard, and it's individuals trying to figure out how to let things go and how to forgive and how to apologize, how to listen well to truths.
And be corrected.
Yeah, and be corrected. And, like, that's one of the things on the podcast, we didn't say this on this one, but pretty much every time we've had a conversation with an Indigenous person on Unpacked, which is, we've had quite a few episodes, there is an anxious tension for me, I don't think Tara experiences anxiety at all, but for me, that I just don't know enough, and I feel like I'm going to say something stupid, then I inevitably do.
Like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's exactly right. It's just like, but my intention has always be to listen to the other, mm-hmm. and to listen to all of what the other has to say, even, like, I am a white male, you know, and a lot of harm has been done by white men. And I do think it's just one of those things where it's like, my intention is to hear people's stories and hear who they are, how they became who they were. Even Unpacked is a little bit about that. And so I sure appreciate you sharing a little bit of, even for yourself, some of the things you learned about residential schools and some of those things. And yeah, it's, I wish that we as a country would have been able to listen even more clearly before we had to discover the children's bodies. Mm-hmm. That's what, at least for so many of us, that's what it's taken. And that is tragic in nature, that we couldn't hear before that.
And I think it comes down to tolerance. I think you've kind of touched on it a little bit, because, you know, being able to be open and listen to your neighbor, to your, you know, person down the street, whatever their nationality may be, you know, it just, I think, allows us to be more open and more free, and we're not putting our own egos in front of it, that if you get something, if you get ahead, I'm going to lose something. And I think that's what the power struggle comes down to, and has been from the beginning, was that, you know, that mindset of take, 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 and I'm not going to listen to maybe your words of wisdom or how you view the world or, you know, live your life, because it's not what I believe you should be doing. And, you know, if we look back at, you know, the indigenous peoples when they were, you know, first here pre-contact, you know, the earth provided everything, right? The ground was the medicine cabinet. We didn't have all these pharmaceutical things, right? The land provided the food, the clothing, the shelter, provided everything for centuries that the people needed to survive. A lot of indigenous people, I mean, they still live on the land. They still are caretakers and stewards of the land. And whether it be indigenous in Canada or indigenous to other countries, you know, they still have that view and the belief of taking care of it. Because without the land, the plants, the animals, where would that leave us if we lost all of that? We're not going to survive for very long. So I think with everybody putting their ego aside, and not that it needs to be like kumbaya kind of thing, but you know, just being there to listen, and you know, we don't have to do all of these things. And sometimes I find, you know, conflict with that even within myself, because I look at, you know, all the jobs it'll create, the, you know, prosperity within within the nations, within the First Nation communities, for a lot of different things, clean water. You know, if, you know, some communities, I'm not sure how it is out there, but I know there's communities in Ontario haven't been able to drink water for the last 30 years. And, you know, I think, you know, for a big part, if this was mainstream, a quote-unquote normal community and not an Indigenous community, those issues would not be an issue. And even for my own community, I mean, it's an hour and a half outside of Ottawa, and you can't drink the water.
Really?
Wow. So much brokenness in our collective community, we call Canada. I think you've said something really interesting, right? It's like when you can't see somebody else, when you only see when someone else gets ahead that you get less, it's like a terror of community. It terrors that community and connection and how we care for each other. Now, thanks for sharing that. That's some important stuff. This is a good segue into this, is I think that's eye-opening to even hear that. Your own community an hour and half outside, right, doesn't have clean water at this particular point. When people come out of the blanket exercise, we talked about this a while back. You talked to us in our pre-interview about this, but what have been some of the things you've seen in terms of transformation or aha moments of settlers, of people like me and Tara who would do this experience? What are some examples of eye-opening experiences for folks that aren't in the Indigenous community?
You know, one of the great things about the blanket exercise is because it does help educate people about, you know, some of these issues. And, you know, there's one exercise in particular that the shift in one gentleman was night and day. Like, I could not believe it. So after the exercise, we have a sharing circle, and I can't get into too many of the particulars because the Sharing Circle is a sacred space, and what's said in Vegas stays in Vegas or whatever. It's kind of the same idea.
That's
with
a Sharing Circle is like Vegas. Okay. Like Vegas. Okay.
That's right. That's right. That's right. What happens in the Sharing Circle stays in the Sharing Circle. But, you know, all kidding aside, this one gentleman, what he experienced, he came in angry, and angry at his employer for making him do this because he thought the whole thing was crap. It was not necessary, and he didn't know why he needed to waste his time. And he was very resistant, very, very closed off. Now, the exercise itself is only like an hour and a half. So to see someone transform their ideals and their personal feelings towards a certain group of people is really kind of mind-blowing. So throughout the, you know, as the exercise progressed, his anger shifted from his employer to the government and the education system. This isn't stuff that we learned in school. This is kind of the, you know, Canada's dirty little secrets, right? The Indigenous history that they want to keep behind closed doors and not be allowed out. So for him, you know, finding out a lot of this stuff was very shocking. And you know, when we talked about, you know, residential schools and the 60s scoop, for example, you know, she talked about, you know, the big black car coming up and them just going and then never seeing her parents again. And he's like, you know, I have small kids at home. And he says, I couldn't imagine just somebody driving up and driving away with my kids and never being able to find them again. He spoke quite a bit, but, you know, he apologized to his coworkers. He had a couple of coworkers who were also Indigenous. And he's like, you know, I've always avoided you. He says, I figured you got the job because we had quota to meet. So you didn't deserve to have the position that you have. It was given to you, just like everything else was given to you. And he goes, you know, I'm so sorry for treating you less than. And he says, you know what, I'm definitely going to be sitting down and speaking with my kids and learning more. That transformation was huge. It was probably 3 weeks later, he emailed me directly and he just said, you know what, thank you again for leading that exercise. He said, I'm a completely changed person. To have one person with that reaction, you know, just actually even now it's just like making me all
yeah, me too.
But that's what the exercise does, not to everyone, but for those who, you know, are willing to give it a chance. And even if they're like this gentleman, you know, even though he was closed off, at some point, you know, something piqued his attention that he opened up and allowed himself to really listen. And it changed him. You know, people afraid of Indigenous people and being afraid of losing what they have. All that it's about is learning. And the exercise isn't there to blame white settlers or immigrants, newcomers into the country. You know, it's not there to lay blame on any one individual. It's there to educate and help people realize that Indigenous population didn't have a say in what happened to them.
I think there's, you know, one of the things when I think about growth or transformation in individuals or organizations or whatever, it's like, what I would say is, you know, what are the jumping off points, you know, of where you grow from? I think it's a fairly, well, it seems like a pretty like obvious thing, but I think oftentimes we don't jump off of truth, off of truthful places, where that's personal growth or whatever it is, right? And so I do think that being willing or brave enough to understand and learn truth is the jumping off point of how we might grow and how we might experience transformation. But there's a great story too of this guy who comes and mad at his employer and then experiencing this, what sounds to me like this is incredible transformation. We're about to wrap it up, but okay, Tara's got a question.
I do. I was just curious if you could talk a little bit about, like, because you did mention this person was resistant to it. Do you encounter other people who come into the blanket exercise or even in your own personal life who are racist towards it, the exercise itself, the people in the room, and how do you take care of yourself in that and even stop yourself from feeling bitter even towards people or resentful?
Yeah, there's lots, not only for the exercise itself, but just in general. I mean, racism is out there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, and I've even had this said to me recently, there's no more racism against Indigenous people anymore in Canada. I didn't do anything other than laugh, really. because
that's like so shocking.
Because if you're not an Indigenous person, you're not going to experience racism as a First Nations, Inuit, or Métis individual. Yeah, to hear that statement is almost, well, laughable to me. But
to that, you're also not out in our country anywhere, because I hear lots of racist things. And I'm not around an Indigenous person necessarily at the time, but I certainly am hearing derogatory things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like if you've come to a place where you don't think racism exists in Canada anymore, maybe you have been really in your home for 2 years. I'm sorry, but I didn't want to interrupt, but I'm just like, that's a fairly out of touch
comment.
Yeah, that was my thought as well. But no, I mean, the big thing, and you know, again, we talk about fear a lot, and people are, I think, afraid of the word racism. Mm. But I think we, to deal with it, just like anything else, you need to call it what it is. You know, we have a lot of different words, like when somebody dies, you know, we say that they've passed on, you know, they bought the farm or whatever your expression is, you know, on the other side or whatever. But bottom line is, it's they died, they're dead. In order to take your power back, and it's the same with, you know, dealing with grief. If you did lose a family member, call it what it is. Don't be afraid of the word. There is power in words, and there is power in storytelling, which is where the blanket exercise, you know, being able to tell that story, and in dealing with racism, and kind of hand in hand with racism goes microaggressions. Mm-hmm. So even things, you know, I've had people tell me that, oh, I don't see color. You know, I don't see that you're a First Nations person. You're just Connor. Well, I'm sorry, but I am a First Nations person. I have dark skin. I cannot walk down the street and be mistaken as not being First Nations. And you have to recognize that, you know, my history, my culture, cannot be erased, right? So just saying something, you know, for someone to say that, you know, I don't see color, well, that in itself is a racist statement, mm-hmm. from my perspective, because we're all colors, which is, you know, in Indigenous culture, the medicine wheel itself is four colors for the four nations of this land. And color is very, very important. It's how you use that color. For example, Thunder Bay, as yourself, Evan, as a white man walking down the streets of Thunder Bay, mm-hmm. you can get, the cops can drive by you 10, 12 times and never stop. They'll just keep on going. But for an Indigenous man or a woman walking down the streets of Thunder Bay, they'll be stopped 10 or 12 times mm-hmm. to find out where they're going, what are they doing, right? It'll be 20 questions. So, and even with our healthcare system, I have lots of friends who are white, and I'm very thankful. Just had one friend go in and they just had a baby. I'm very, very thankful that she does not have to worry about social services standing outside her room as she's giving birth, because our healthcare system mandates that nurses notify social services when an Indigenous woman is there to give birth. My niece, three babies later, each one of them, her first conversation was with social services, because they're there. Again, goes back to that racism and having that fear. For myself, when I do encounter, mentioned self-care, mm-hmm. I rely on my culture. I wasn't raised in my culture. This was something that I decided probably in my mid-30s that I'm taking my power back. Mid to late 20s before I would even say I was First Nations man. Because I grew up that it was a bad thing. For me to move forward and be who I am, I needed to take my power back and say to myself that it's okay to be First Nations. And it's okay for me to learn my language, to learn about my culture, to engage in ceremonies of my ancestors, giving me that little extra of confidence of speaking my truth. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's what we all need to do, is speak our truth. And that's, being able to have other people listen to that truth without judgment. Everybody wants that. Doesn't matter what color of the rainbow they are from.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, very well said. Glad you asked that question. That was really good. As we do get ready to wrap up, can you just tell us real quick, what do you hope people heard today?
I hope that they hear that there is no judgment, there should be no guilt, that everybody deserves a chance, and that people can put their egos and their fear aside, and we can be one nation with many nations in between.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Oh, that was good. I'm glad I asked that question. Hey, can you as we get ready to say goodbye, can you tell us a little bit about how people get in touch with Kairos Canada and or find a blanket exercise in their community or online?
Yeah, or book one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. So the main website to Kairos Canada is just kairoscanada.org. So it's KairosCanada.org. And you can get to the blanket exercise through there, or you can go directly to the Kairos blanket exercise and go straight to the blanket exercise website.
Thanks. Thanks so much for joining us today, Connor. This was a gift to us, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy it too, and hearing some of your stories and your perspectives on life and the Indigenous culture, and even just learning a little bit more truth of kind of what's happening and what has happened in our country as well is important if we're going to make a good Canada here together.
Yeah.
Yep. So
thank you.
Miigwech to you both. Really appreciate all that you do, and appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Connor. Right.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Right. Bye.
You too. Bye now.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We'd love if you take a moment to rate, subscribe, and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, thanks for listening.